Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
It's time to talk some football with the professor John Clayton, who's with us every day here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle, joining us live from Indianapolis. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
So you had a chance.
Hello, Roz.
Hi, John.
Long time since you guys have had a chance to speak, right?
Yeah. It's been hours.
John, you had a chance to catch up with the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks today. What was your biggest takeaway from that conversation?
He was pretty pumped. I mean, he feels good about the team. He realizes, you know, more things need to be done. You know, they've got to improve the pass rush. They've got to improve the defense. You know, they can't just have 28 sacks. They can't rank 26th on defense. But, you know, he still has a good feel for the overall team, particularly, you know, knowing how close it came to maybe having a number one seed. And so he thinks it's a good team. He thinks it's a hard team for opponents to be able to face, but he also realized more work has to be done.
Any chance he has another quote-unquote DK Metcalf moment this combine?
He tends to think not. I mean, DK was one of the few that he took his shirt off for, and I don't know, he's not negatively reviewing anybody, because again, it's like Metcalf didn't go to the bottom of the second round, but I don't know if there's any first-rounders he would take his shirt off for, so he thinks he's going to keep his shirt on in this one.
Well, we know how much he liked the base defense last year, John, but Michael Kendrick's coming off that ACL and being a free agent. What's the likelihood that he returns?
I think it's going to be tough because you're talking about an ACL that happened so late. I mean, you know, here it is. They're not sure that Penny is going to be able to make it back and might have to. He's definitely going to start training camp on PUP. And, you know, may have to spend six games on PUP at the beginning of the season. And so it'd be the same thing for Kendricks. And so, you know, what he has to evaluate right now, first, do you bring Kendricks back as much as he likes him? And then secondly, if you have him, he's probably not going to be available till midseason. So you know that, they have Cody Barton out there to be able to play the strong side, but you kind of get the feeling, you know, based on how they are at the slot position, whether Ugo Amadi's ready to take over or whether they go a different direction, they're probably going to go more nickel than they do base defense, because the reason they went base defense is because the three linebackers were that good, including Kendricks.
Hey, John, it just occurred to me, with K.J. Wright and Justin Britt, do you think they're going to renegotiate with those guys? I mean, do you think they're going to try and just pay them what the contract says for next year, or do you think there's going to be some negotiating there?
I think that's something that's a summer decision as opposed to a decision now. I mean, they've got $53 million of cap room, so they don't have to clear out any cap now whatsoever. And again, you know, if you go to a player like that, any one of those two, then they're likely not wanting to be there. Because if you're asking them to take a pay cut, then they'll want to leave. And, you know, Justin Britt can be firm on that. I mean, K.J. Wright can be firm on that. And right now, this is a team that needs players, not players that are going to be leaving the team. So I think what you do, you know, because knowing Justin's coming off the major injury, is that you decide that how he is in training camp and how he's going to be for the start of the regular season. So I don't think there's any need to do that now, because all you can do is anger the player and then cause more problems than good.
Yeah, it would seem the urgency to restructure those deals isn't there based on the number you just threw out there. But do you think if it feels like potentially it hinges on Clowney's deal? If they do sign Clowney and he is making an exorbitant amount of money, that would then probably prompt them to restructure those deals, wouldn't it?
You decide that later, not now. And again, it's like, if you do it now, you create more openings and more holes. It's like, okay, you know, they may have to replace three or four starters on the defensive line. And then now Kendricks is probably going to be back. Now you're basically saying, if you go to KJ Wright and he doesn't want to take the pay cut, then all of a sudden now you're replacing almost your entire front seven. All you're going to have left is Bobby Wagner. And then, you know, whether it's Rasheem Green or LJ Collier or whatever. So no, that would be a horrible thing to do. I mean, they need to add players, not subtract players. And if you go to players that ask them to take pay cuts, I mean, like, for example, in Kansas City, as great as the season was, they have Sammy Watkins, who made one of the big Super Bowl catches you could ever make, but they realize they got to pay Patrick Mahomes, they got to pay Chris Jones, and so they're going to ask him to take a pay cut. And when that happens, the player usually gets cut. And so if you go to KJ Wright, now you're possibly replacing two of your three starting linebackers, and you still don't know if you're going to get Clowney back. And then if you you do that to Justin Britt and his $9 million salary, then all of a sudden you may be replacing Mike Iupati, you may be replacing George Fant, certainly Jermaine Ifedi. So now you've torn your offensive line apart. That's a decision for the summer, not now.
Is this combine for the Seahawks any different than the ones in the past because of the fact they've already got a lot of draft picks this year?
I think it's pretty typical. I mean, okay. I think that, there's certainly some nuances to this draft that are a little bit different. I mean, you know, other than, say, Chase Young, who is the number two pick in the draft, you know, you can go into the teens before the next edge rusher goes. So I don't know if that's good or bad for the Seahawks. I know, talking to John Snyder, he likes the depth of the edge rushers, but of course, you know, what this team is needing is, you know, some edge rusher who can develop like Frank Clark into a Pro Bowl type of guy. And so that's what they like. Now, can you find that? And if to do that, they might have to trade up to be able to get that. So that's a little bit different. I mean, you know, everybody's all worried about the third receiver thing, but this is like the deepest wide receiver draft I've ever seen. You know, 20 to 25 wide receivers with third round grades or better. So it's like, okay, if you need a third, because they don't need a number one, they got Tyler Lockett. They have a number two, certainly in DK Metcalf. And they could have a number three in John Ursula, but they can't get him on the field because, you know, they got Lockett in the slot and that. So, I mean, you can get that third guy in the draft somewhere in the top three rounds, most likely in rounds two or more likely in round three.
Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network, John, he's reporting that the Colts are interested in Phillip Rivers. I love the idea of Phillip Rivers there in Indianapolis, John, with a good offensive line in front of him. Phillip Rivers might still have some game left.
Yeah, I agree, because I know I've been saying it now since the time that he moved his family out of San Diego and to Florida, that the most likely spot for him to go is Indianapolis. But I'll throw even something more interesting into the mix too, because, you know, if you're doing that and knowing you're only going to have him for 1 or 2 years, you're chasing away Jacoby Brissett, you need a young quarterback to groom behind him. And the young quarterback that I think if they can get him in the second round that would really fit would be Jacob Eason, because, you know, both guys have strong arms. You know, Jason has a delivery that I think that Phillip can help work with. You know, certainly Phillip can help him with his game and all that stuff. And so I don't want to necessarily take Eason out of the first round, but that could be a real good spot for him because, you know, that, I don't think that Jason should play the first year. But, you know, I think that Eason, that would be a nice fit because then you have the best of all worlds. You have the quarterback who can get you to the playoffs, and then you have your future quarterback learning behind him.
Hey, John, how surprised would you be to see this team pull off a trade to address their issues with the defensive line? We talked about, you know, the potential free agents out there. Most of the big names seem like they're all going to be franchised. So you're talking about Bennett. You're talking about Jason Pierre-Paul. You're talking about some of these older players, Robert Quinn. Could you see them pulling off some sort of trade the way they have in the past where they shocked us with, I mean, Clowney was a shock, Percy Harvin, Jimmy Graham. You see anything like that happening?
Yeah, I mean, if they're going to do that, it would be a trade for not somebody old, but somebody in the mid-20s, you know, 26, 25, 27. So let's say, for example, we figure that Jacksonville is going to franchise Yannick Nakia. I always screw up his name, but
Ngakoue.
Yannick. Ngakoue, and then Matt Judon over in Baltimore is going to get franchised. So that could be an option. If you can maybe pull that off for a second-round pick, maybe it's a second-rounder and a fourth, then I think you're talking that could be something that could be very appealing and something they could do because, you know, you don't know where they stand as far as Dante Fowler. I mean, you're right about some of the other guys. They're a little bit older. They are going to come in cheaper, but they've got to find that young guy if they lose Clowney, because, you know, at least when they picked up Clowney, they got a 26-year-old defensive end who'd been to three Pro Bowls. Well, Yannick would be one, because again, there's going to be cap problems in Jacksonville. And if there's no CBA deal that's passed, then they're going to really have more cap problems because of the Nick Foles contract and others. So no, I think that that could be a possibility because again, where they have, again, it's a low second round pick because it's a Kansas City pick. It's at the bottom of the second round. It's the 64th pick in the draft to make it work for a second rounder. Because remember, you saw last year that San Francisco traded for Dee Ford, and that was a high second round pick. So probably you may have to pay a 2 and a 4 for Yannick. But if you can get him structured to a $17, $18 million deal, that might not be bad.
If you've got questions for the professor, you can text them into 710-710 is the text line. If We have time. We'll get to some of your questions during the segment.
John, I heard you suggest that Jacob Eason might not go in the first round, although I think you probably think he's going to go in the first round. I know I do. This seems like a pretty strong quarterback crew. Would you agree?
Yeah, it's a good one. I mean, I don't think it's as good as 2012 when you had Andrew Luck and you had Russell Wilson and Kirk Cousins and RG3 didn't really work out. But that was a really good group. And so this one's a good group. You know, you could have some guys that may not make it. I mean, the last really good group certainly was the Patrick Mahomes year because you had Deshaun Watson and Baker Mayfield and, you know, guys like that. That was, you know, the last good one. But no, I think this, it may not be as good as, say, because, I mean, you look at these guys and say, okay, who's going to be the real all-pro type of guy? And, I mean, you look at Joe Burrow, I think he'll be the number one pick. He's had small hands, and he's going to the Bengals. Then you look at the, you know, you don't know about Tua because he has a hip injury. He'll recover from that, but is he going to be Marcus Mariota with a history of injuries? You don't know exactly on Justin Herbert, who I think is going to be the sixth pick. But, you know, it's a good group, but I think, you know, certainly it's not as good as that Patrick Mahomes year.
John, you're not going with that stupid small hands thing, are you?
Yes.
Patrick Mahomes has small hands, John.
Hey, Patrick Mahomes had a nine and a quarter inch hand. That's a quarter inch bigger than Justin. I mean, and certainly you saw that the quarterback got at the top of the draft, Joe Burrow. But you have to buy some of it because if you have small hands, you'll have a tendency to fumble.
Brett Favre had big hands over a 10, and he has the most fumbles in the NFL history.
Mm-hmm.
Big hands, John. Big hands.
Greg had small hands, and at one point he set the fumble record.
Until Brett Favre with his big hands broke it.
Yeah. Of course, remember, I mean, what he only played, 17, 18 years and didn't miss a game.
All right.
I guess
you have any more hands questions?
No, that's it.
More hands questions. Let's get more of those.
Hey, John, bad news. Trevon Boykin, sentenced to 3 years in prison for the 2018 beating of his girlfriend. Former Seahawks quarterback, and he seemed to be in trouble from the get-go.
Yeah, he was. And, the incident sounded bad when we heard about it. You know, then everything stayed quiet for so long. And these cases sometimes can take a long period of time. And, you know, a lot of people kind of thought that, you know, he would get incarcerated and would get into problems. But, yeah, 3 years, that's a tough one because obviously it's ended his pro football career. He never got a chance to really get back. And but, again, it's like if you make an act like that, I mean, you deserve punishment, and he got his punishment.
John, the 509 wants to know, Professor, how will they – divide up the games if it's a 17-game schedule? Obviously now with 16, you've got 8 on the road, 8 at home. How do they work out the road-home split?
Well, what they'll do is they'll try to get some international games, and they'll probably have a certain number of international games they can have unless they know they can get more international games. And then kind of like they do right now, they'll take a extra game, and you'll have a home game 1 year and a road game another. And so what they'll do is they'll take another division, probably in the other conference, and then you'll play, one, two, three, four. So, because, right now, the way it's set up, if you have a first-place schedule, you play a first-place team, but now they're going to the other conference. But, again, they'll have a schedule back and forth where, that home team is going to have the home game 1 year and the road game the next. That one's easy to work out because you can just, schedule it, and then it's going to be tied to where you finish in the standings. And so, they can work that out.
Any scuttlebutt on what's going to happen on that vote? I know it's just the first day and it's not coming out for two more weeks, but what do you think?
Yeah, I get the feeling it's going to pass, even though there's going to be a lot of resistance. I mean, you saw Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, you saw J.J. Watt a week ago went against it. Marquise Pouncey of the Pittsburgh Steelers had the greatest shouting match in the world because every word that he had against this deal was a swear word, so he went crazy on it. But everything, I'm kind of getting the feeling, because I know I just spent some time, they had an agent meeting today. The agent meeting was just everybody shouting at the union for this deal and all that stuff. But again, it still comes down to the players who aren't making the big money, the players who still are in their rookie contracts, that are first-year guys, second-year guys, third-year guys, and then minimum salary guys, and that's still the bulk of the union. And again, what they're looking at is there's improvements for them. And if those guys think the improvements are enough, then I think it gets voted in. Right now, if I was a betting person, which I'm not, you know, I would lean toward betting that it's going to pass.
I am a betting person, John, and I'm with you on that.
I know that.
I'm with you on that.
I mean, this may be one for you because, you know, when you have the executive committee voting, 7-4 against, and then you have pretty much a reluctant group of player reps who did vote 17-14, but the initial vote was against, and so they kind of reluctantly, you know, gave it the chance to get to that, you know, you would have to almost put the vote in the underdog role. So if you're having the underdogs being the voting for, how would you bet it?
It looks like a pick'em right now to me, John.
That's cool. That's fair.
Yeah, it's pretty much a pick'em. What about this franchise tag window? It opens tomorrow. It goes through March 12th. Is there a flurry of activity in that area the first day?
No, I think it's going to be a little reluctant. I mean, you know, what you can do, like a team like Tennessee, you know, they could make the decision. It's like, okay, we're going to put the franchise tag on Derrick Henry and the transition on Ryan Tannehill, because again, you can always remove those franchise tags, but then you also realize you're probably going to upset the player, and it's like you might want to wait it out. And of course, in the end, what you probably have to do, if they do go to the no deal, then one of those guys you have to pull off the tag, because you can only at that time have one. So it may be the best thing to wait, but if you're worried about losing your player, put the franchise tag. Like, for example, they very well in Baltimore may do that with Matthew Judon. Or they may do that with Yannick. And so some of those guys, you know, you may just take the attack. We're going to do it now because we're going to hold this up. But, you know, you still like to negotiate it. But obviously there's going to be a bunch of franchise tags and the ability maybe if you have to do the two. Like, you know, Dallas is in a tough spot because you franchise Dak Prescott and transition Amari Cooper. That could be one. But, you know, if not, and all of a sudden you reach too soon, then you know and you pull the franchise, then you're going to lose Cooper.
Hey, John, Jake Heaps was throwing out an idea today that perhaps the Seahawks could pull off one of those trades we were talking about and maybe throw, I don't know, a second rounder or something like that for Von Miller. And apparently you said there's no way that would happen. Why is that?
Because John Elway said this week that they're picking up the option. Actually, they did it a week ago on Von Miller. So they've already made their extra commitment to Von. And so because it was, you know, a financial move, he's staying there. So they've already made that decision. When you pick up the option on the player, it doesn't mean that he's not tradable, but you pick up the option because you want to keep the player. So whoever was putting out that story, and it wasn't Jake, but whoever put that story was about as wrong as a Detroit television person that said that they're shopping Matthew Stafford.
You and Jake seem to have issues, John.
What's that?
I'm kidding.
You didn't agree on that?
I was teasing that you and Jake seem to have issues.
No, we don't, because again, it's like, you know, he was reporting the rumor that he heard and saw, and everybody heard and saw, but, you know, what he didn't know was that they executed the option more than a week ago.
So do you have a favorite thing at the combine, besides going to eat at the Slippery Noodle when it's over?
I don't know. It's like, I just like, you know, everywhere you walk, you can run into a person that can tell you something you're trying to find out, whether it's going to be free agency, whether it's going to be, you know, the labor issues, whether it's going to be draft. I mean, you know, it was like great in the last 2 days because I was able to talk to Eason. I was able to talk to, Gordon at quarterback, Anthony Gordon. We got Pete Carroll. We got John Snyder. You know, today we're able to get Nick Harris and Trey Adams. And so that's the great part because, again, you get to accomplish a lot of work. And, again, the way this restructure of this thing is, you know, now I'm flying back tomorrow as opposed to, you know, Saturday or Sunday because, you know, there's not much more because all we have is defensive players for like 8 to 11 tomorrow morning East Coast time and then some defensive players on Friday. But it's like, okay, why stay for that? You know, because, again, we're not able to watch the combine. We have to watch it on TV. So why stay in a hotel room in Indy watching in TV when I can watch it at home?
Hey, John, are there any players that are electing not to participate just in terms of drills and everything? Every year there are guys that are saying, no, I'm going to wait for my pro day. I'm not doing anything here other than the measurables. And every year there's a debate. Oh, it's going to hurt them. This guy should do it. Who is that guy this year? Anybody who said he's not working out?
I can't give you one that isn't doing it that could hurt himself. I mean, Joe Burrow's not going to work out, and he's expected to be the first pick in the draft. Chase Young's not going to work out, but he's supposed to go to Washington as a second player in the draft. But you know, finding one to hurt himself, we'll have to wait to see who's working out and who's not. But I like Jake and Eason's working himself up because all he can do is help his cause. And I'm sure that most of the other guys, like, particularly, it's like there's not going to be a lot of the wide receivers that aren't going to do things because, you know, when you're competing with 25 guys with third round grades or better, you know, why are you going to put yourself in a position where maybe you can fall behind somebody? So most of those guys. So I think as it usually is, you know, there's going to be great, because I still remember back in the old days when the agents wouldn't let their guys do anything, that there was always like 160 guys that wouldn't work out at all. Now, I mean, you may see in a group three or four, some of those are going to be because of injuries. And for the most part, unless there's some extreme circumstance that they don't want to work out, and again, you can understand top picks because, you know, so if Burrow works out, is it going to not work out? Is it going to change the opinion that the Bengals have of him? Probably not. And Chase Young, most people think is better than Nick Bosa. So can that change by him not working out? And I think the answer is no.
John, were you there for Doug Marrone at the podium today, the Jacksonville coach?
I was not, no.
Oh, you missed that?
I was on the show.
He says he's undecided on who the starting quarterback's going to be next year.
Uh-huh. You know why?
No, I don't know why, John. That's why I brought it up.
Yeah, he's undecided.
Yeah, he is undecided.
Yeah, he is. And again, because, you know, there's a lot of different factors in that, because I know I was talking to some people down in Jacksonville, and as good as Gardner Minshew was, you know, he still didn't do much against winning teams, and you know, he still had that one little stretch where, you know, teams caught up to him a little bit. You know, there's genuine excitement. There's still the thought that you know, Gardner may beat out Nick. And I think what it comes down to is that, you know, if they've got to find a way to move Nick Foles. And so, like, for example, I was checking with people in Chicago because they've got two or three coaches from Philadelphia who worked with him over in Chicago, and that might be an option. But again, if you're trading Nick Foles with a $22 million contract, it's going to be very much like Ryan Tannehill. I mean, you'll get a marginal draft choice, but also you're going to have to pay the Bears in a good portion of it to play him or to get him satisfied financially. Because again, you know, they're taking and that could be a cap hit they may not be able to do. Because I know just if they would just cut him or trade him without paying money, you know, they're only going to save $3 million. And so, you know, the cap issue is one that has to keep him. It's kind of like the situation with Cam Newton, you know, where Cam Newton still has 2 months to recover from his Liz Frank injury, which he should, but also that could cause some complications, you know, if you trade him because he's not going to pass a physical for 2 months. And secondly, you know, it could cause some issues as far as, you know, some, you know, with the cap as far as, you know, you're letting an injured player go.
John, good stuff. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
There you go. There's the Professor John Clayton. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up, Scott Servais was a guest of Danny and Gallant this morning, and it's clear that he is excited about the young guys on this team. We'll let you hear a bit of what he had to say. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and more, the Graz in today on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore. Front door.
Coming up at 5 o'clock here with Bob, Dave, and more, Danny Kelly from The Ringer, who is out there in Indianapolis as well at the Combine, will join us. We'll talk about some of that with him, get his thoughts on what the Seahawks should do at some various spots. Meanwhile, you got spring training baseball happening for your Seattle Mariners, and there's a different kind of excitement. It's not about, hey, this is going to be a great team, and maybe they're a playoff team. Nobody's selling that, including the front office, including the GM, the manager, everybody else. Everybody understands what they're in store for, but for the first time in quite some time, you feel like you're looking at your future.
Exactly.
Hopefully it pans out. You know, I think
right.
It's a lot to expect every player to turn into a star.
Well, there's no guarantee that it will, but you should be watching guys, for the most part, in their early to mid-20s playing.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels a
or
lot
some
different.
Teenagers.
That's a very realistic possibility, and it's a very different experience than watching last year.
When's the last time the Mariners...
Oh,
have they done
one.
Something like this?
They've never done anything like this.
What's the closest?
Not since I've been in town.
No, it was more tinkering in the past, trying to fine-tune it and get a little better.
Where you've had a good number of potentials. Well, I mean, we're talking about Julio Rodriguez and Kelnick and Evan White and Justin Dunn. And, I mean, there's a large group.
Well, the big three. I mean, back in the days of the big three, we were all excited about those guys.
Holtz and Walker and Paxton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when I came to town, Griffey was just getting started. I mean, there was excitement around him. And
yeah, you've had individuals.
Randy A-Rod Johnson and Buhner. You know, there were some guys in that team. Pinella brought in a few other young guys, but they were a little more established.
But I'm talking homegrown guys coming through your system the way
Position players recently that you were excited about, with Ackley being number two overall and Zunino being number three.
Well, Jeff Clement. I mean, they've missed on a lot of guys that they've drafted early on, unfortunately.
Yeah, they have. But this is just the number, the volume right now seems unlike any other time in their history, where you're just looking at a volume of young guys from Justice Sheffield to Dunn to, like I said, Evan White, Kelnick, Rodriguez, J.P. Crawford, a guy you brought in. Just a lot of youth that has a ton of potential and promise attached to them. We'll see who truly pans out. But it feels like it's just a different excitement. It's not about expectations for wins this year. It's about what these players are going to ultimately represent for this organization. And Scott Servais, a guest of Danny and Gallant today, talked about a few different things. And he was asked what stood out to him about two of the younger guys in Kelnick and Rodriguez.
They're good. It hasn't been they're young. It's that they're really good. That's what stood out for me. We've seen both of these guys in the early games. Kelnick's been swinging the bat really, really well. His timing is really good. Julio will be in the starting lineup today. But they're good players. They're good people. They're asking great questions. They fit in they're very, very comfortable in our clubhouse. And that's the nice thing about having so many young players. It isn't like they're 19, 20 years old and they're jumping into a clubhouse full of mid-30 guys. They're in a group that they can hang out with away from the field. It's just a tight-knit group of young players that all have similar goals. They want to get established in the big leagues. But ultimately, they all want to win, and they want to be part of something really big here.
Shannon had a really nice interview with Julio Rodriguez at 710sports.com if you want to check that out, and talked about how it was really important for him to learn English and doing his interviews in English. And then I love that Kelnick has swagger about him. He's got a cockiness about him. It'd be kind of fun to have a Mariner that had a chip on his shoulder and was just, you know, a different from what we usually see. And maybe, you know, talking some smack along the way, that'd be kind of fun to see.
Seemed like the last guy they had like that, people in the clubhouse didn't like much, and that was Valencia.
Right.
He had a bit of an edge.
But that was a different clubhouse. I mean, Servais talked about the difference in the clubhouse. And look, I mean, we're seeing in baseball, it's always been true, and it's true now, and it was true 20, 30 years ago. If you're good enough at 19 and 20, you can play in the majors, if you're good enough. I mean,
you don't have to wait.
So I don't see holding guys back anymore. If you're ready to play in the majors, play.
I'm with you on that, but I still think that they don't want to bring them up too quick. And we saw what happened with Ackley and Zunino. So there's all kinds of examples, but boy,
yeah, but you can't. I mean, as much as you look at that, I mean, it's a different organization, different eyes picking the players. I mean, you just can't think that way.
I think you're going to trust your scouts, right? At this point, if they say, "Hey, Kelnick's ready. He can play at this level," or if they say, he'd benefit more from another month, 2 months down here. There's no urgency on this year.
No, there's no urgency on this year, but there's no point in waiting if they're ready.
If they're ready,
that'd be my point. Last year, it made sense to wait. Last year, you had some veteran guys. You were still kind of in the process of doing it. Now you're doing it. So play the young guys.
Do you think it would destroy Kelnick if he came up here and went one for his first 20? Maybe it would. Maybe it would. But he seems like the kind of kid that could handle that.
Did you think Ackley was going to get destroyed? He was a consensus pick. We all look at him like, oh, what a terrible pick.
He was a college player.
He was also good in his first year.
Yeah, he was. But there was nobody going, why would they pick this guy? What a disaster. That was a reach.
You can always find examples of guys. I mean, Willie Mays started his career one for 28 or something like that. I mean, you can always find examples of guys who started fast and guys who didn't. And it comes down to what you said, Jim, is his character the type, and this is where your scouts come in, that he can handle that.
Yeah,
versus being destroyed by it.
To me, that's who you rely on, are the guys that are down there watching him day in, day out. And if they tell you, hey, this guy's ready, you know, but if they say, hey, he'd benefit from more time down here, then you adhere to that, in my opinion, because there is no urgency. They're not the difference this year between going to the postseason and not. So if they benefit from more time in the minors, then leave them there.
That's my point is just that because it's failed in the past, there's no reason to not to try it now with different guys and different players. And we've seen too many examples of 21. I mean, what were there, like five or six All-Star players this year who were under 23 years old? I mean, young guys are making it.
A couple other thoughts from service talking about this camp's been really different just because of all of the youth that is there.
It's actually really fun. I've enjoyed this camp, and coming into camp, we knew it was going to be different in a good way, and the fact that it was really going to be a priority for us, our coaching staff, the people around our team to simplify. How simple can we make things, and how clear can we be in our messaging and what's important to us, and sitting down with players and explaining to them kind of their player plans and giving them direction on how to get better. Oftentimes with veteran players, you assume they know how to get ready for the day, to prepare before games, to get their workouts in after games, all those things that go along with being a big leaguer. They've done it for a while, so this camp has been fun.
Also went on to talk about just the chemistry that's there because they're all at similar points in their career right now.
They're at similar points in their lives as far as, like, we have so many young guys that are just engaged or just got married. We have another group of guys that just had their first little baby. I mean, they're all in that same grouping, so they're going through life at a similar pace, and it's really valuable when you're going through the same thing professionally. So I think, you know, the number of conversations that I've had with young players and getting to know a lot of these guys this spring, oftentimes it really doesn't have anything to do with baseball. It's more, where are you at in your life? Who's in your inner circle? You know, and we all want to be part of that inner circle as well. And because I'm really big on all these guys, like, be who you are. You heard me say, I like the different personalities. And some of the guys are going to wear the gold chains. And some of the guys are going to have the beards and how they wear the uni. I really don't care as long as it aligns with us.
The gold chains.
Wow. That sounded like an old guy, and he's not.
Some are going to have the gold chains. Some will have the beards.
Gold chains have been around a long time.
They're just getting bigger. That's all.
They were pretty big in the 70s, Bob.
Were they as big?
In the disco era, they were really, really big.
Very much so.
They were really, really, really big.
I still marvel at some of the chains I see on some of these guys. I mean, it's like, it's a rope. It's a giant, that's a lot of gold.
Yeah.
That was happening in the 70s?
Oh, yeah, quite a bit. Not around my neck, but... Yeah.
I thought they just layered them back then. Like a bunch of, they'd wear like four or five of them.
I think it's going to be fun, though. But, Gross, I'm going to need a reminder at some point when they have a 10-game losing streak that we're not looking for the wins. We're looking for the wins, but not so much the losses. But I've enjoyed just the spring training, the stories from Shannon every day.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan Divish in the Times, Larry Stone, all these guys. I eat up all those stories. And
I think it's energizing everyone, including those who are covering the team.
Yeah, there's optimism around what the future looks like. Not the immediate, but the near future. So hopefully fans will be able to recognize that when watching this team this year, because it'll be frustrating. It's going to be very uneven. That's a lot of youth that you're injecting into this, and it'll continue as the year goes on. Meanwhile, coming up at the top of the hour, Danny Kelly from The Ringer will join us on the program. But meanwhile, the Browns want Baker Mayfield to get in better shape. We're going to hear more about that when we sweep the dial next. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore with the Groz in today on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
You know, both players will compete. I don't think there's anything wrong in that. I think that, you know, you go in there and you compete, and, you know, hopefully someone will change themselves, you know, or separate themselves, and that the team can see it.
That's the voice of Jags head coach Doug Marrone. They've got two quarterbacks they feel pretty good about. One is your superhero.
Minshew mania, Bob. Yeah. Groz has caught the fever, I think.
I like Minshew, but you think they feel pretty good about both of them?
I think they feel like they're both capable. I don't know which truly stands. They paid Foles a bunch of money.
Yeah, I mean, they're not feeling good about him at all, I don't think. I think that's just trying to wrap up a pig.
Well... We'll see how it turns out this year, but last year when Foles came back from that injury, he wasn't the guy they were expecting, and Minshew did fairly well, although the professor always points out that Minshew didn't have success against winning teams, but still, as a rookie quarterback,
I thought he was fun. I thought he was pretty good.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
You'll be surprised to know Jim agrees with you.
Yeah, I do agree with you on that. I think Minshew Mania should just continue to roll on there in Jacksonville.
Regardless of the results, sure.
What kind of quarterback you think? Is it Anthony Gordon?
Yeah.
Cougar quarterback this year. What kind of quarterback do you think he's going to be at the next level?
Well, I know that Mike Leach, I read some comments from him saying he's going to have a long career in the NFL. Anthony Gordon, when I watched him this year, I was pleasantly surprised. I thought there'd be a down year after Minshew, but boy, he just picked up where Minshew left off, and I think he's going to be drafted in the fifth or sixth round, something like that.
The Browns have a new approach with Baker Mayfield on getting him slimmer and faster.
Yeah, that picture of him shirtless didn't do him any favors this offseason, huh?
Are they going to try and stretch him, too, after what the one reporter said?
Oh, Tony Grossi.
Put him on the rack.
Tony Grossi, for anybody that missed it, is a longtime Cleveland Browns reporter. And it was a live stream going on, and they talked about the quarterbacks other teams had. And then Tony Grossi used an expletive followed by a non-preferred nomenclature for a little person and has subsequently been suspended and apologized.
That was well put.
That was well put.
With a non-preferred nomenclature. Speaking about a little person.
That's a newspaper writer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Knows the language.
He took a shot at Baker Mayfield's lack of height. And apparently, I didn't see the picture they were referring to, the Danny Gallant were. But I heard him say that didn't do him any favor. So apparently he looked a little doughy, a little fleshy. They want him to get in better shape.
Does he look like he's in bad shape to you?
I didn't ever think so, but I didn't see what the picture was.
Rappaport said he bulked up too much. They want him to get leaner and faster.
Ah, all right. Sure, whatever helps.
What's it going to take for you to get on board with Baker Mayfield?
He shuts up.
Okay. Well, then you probably never will.
Maybe not. I don't know. I find
you
him
like him, Gross?
I do. Although he did not have a good year, obviously. Second year. But his first year showed that I think he could be a player.
Even he said he needs to stop talking.
Yeah.
He said as much.
Well, that's no good. Just stop. Now.
I do like his commercials.
Remember Kramer?
Though. Yeah.
Now. I like his commercials, too.
I thought they were great.
Yeah.
That made him very easy
relatable,
to like.
And
I liked him in those commercials.
Living in Cleveland Stadium.
Yeah, and he's talking about the toilet that's broke. Wait, no, it's the third. It's the fourth one. You know, I got 68,000 people coming here. I thought all those commercials were fantastic. So those made him likable. And then you'd hear him after games. You go, yeah, that's right. I don't like him.
I always get a kick out of Wyman when he rips certain quarterbacks. Baker Mayfield's right in there. Josh Rosen.
Yeah.
He doesn't like Philip Rivers.
No.
Thinks he has a punchable face.
He's right.
Yeah.
I had 3 of the 4 runs today. Oh, breaking ball.
Yeah, that's an off-speed pitch. It got away. Catch that left shoulder blade. It's obviously going to cause a stir.
There's a stir.
Cardinals right-handed pitcher Ramon Santos plunked Alex Bregman with a 2-strike pitch in the 5th inning of Houston's spring training game today. It was the 7th time an Astros player's been hit by a pitch this spring.
7 times already?
According to the sheet that Moore gave me.
What, played 3 games maybe?
Yeah.
It's
bad.
Why don't they save him for the regular season?
Oh, they're going to do it
they're
in the regular season too.
They're just warming up. Let's see. Do I want to go ribs? Do I want to go leg? Where do I want to go?
Baseball is uniquely positioned not to handle this well.
Of course. They'll blow it.
Well, I mean, in all fairness, and I'm the first one to criticize them, I don't know how you handle this. I don't know how you do it. I mean,
probably making it so punitive to those.
How can you do that, though? That gives the Astros special privileges.
I know. But you're asking, how do you do it?
You can't. You can't do anything about it. You
let them wear it.
Well, what are you supposed to do, though? I mean, if you throw somebody out of a game, he gets ejected for that game, but then don't you have a harsher suspension for somebody who's thrown at the Astros?
How can you, though? That gives the Astros special treatment.
No, I know.
After they cheated the game, we're going to treat them differently.
But don't you have to try and put a stop to it at some point? I mean, I'm in favor of it. I want him to play dodgeball with the Astros.
I think you do, but I just, like I'm saying, I just, usually baseball picks the wrong choice, and I feel for baseball in this particular circumstance because I don't know what the right choice is.
I think it's going to increase interest in the game, and I know that it's embarrassing, and a lot of people saying, oh, it's a black mark
for how long?
I don't know, but I'm looking forward to the circus. And if it's a 162-game circus featuring the Astros, sign me up for that.
I think attendance goes up when they're on the road.
And I want to see some brawls. I want to see the bullpen emptying. I just want to see all of that.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I think everything gets old, and just throwing at guys will get old.
Well, and maybe it'll run its course. Maybe at some point, first time through, maybe it's bad, and then as they see these teams for a second time, it'll be like, all right, we've been down, we've already gone down this road. Now it's about winning and beating this team. Maybe I think that's the only solution. I don't know if they're going to throw at their heads. I mean, that, as much as I hate what the Astros did, I would not advise that. I wouldn't be in favor of that.
No, don't throw at their heads.
But if you're plunking them in the legs or the backside, hey, you earned it, guys.
Yeah. And remember, the Red Sox story hadn't come out really yet. That's to come.
We still haven't heard.
Still to come.
You know, I'd say if I was a pitcher out there, I'd say, hey, you know what? I know you guys can't steal signs anymore. I'm just going to tell you right now what's coming. It's going to be a high, hard one right at you. Just prepare for that.
Duck. Yeah, seventh time already. I didn't even realize that, though.
That's a lot.
In spring training.
Yeah. Wow, they're working on their control right now. Yeah. I'd like to see how that compares to the first three games last spring training, because guys are trying to find their rhythm, their control. They're working on specific pitches, and maybe they don't have the command they would otherwise have.
Any Mariners been hit yet?
I'm sure somebody has. I haven't taken note of it, but I would guess that somebody's gotten hit at this point.
I think it was either Rodriguez or Kelnick that got hit today.
Okay.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, spring training, it happens. That's easy to explain away, right? I'm working on something. I don't have the grip down yet. You know, they could get away with it now. But I think you talked about what the right answer is. I don't think there is one other than you let it run its course and hope that after their first sort of tour through the opposing ballparks, it sort of dies down a bit.
You think the first game here?
That's a terrible. I mean, I agree with you, but it's a terrible strategy. Well, let's just hope it works out.
You think it'll be a sellout at T-Mobile the first game the Astros are here?
No.
No.
You don't?
No.
Do you?
Well, I'm hoping the lower bowl will be filled at least.
With people angrily spewing invectives?
Yes.
I don't see it.
I want to see the guy that had the fishing pole for A-Rod. I want him back. I want him doing something.
All right. Coming up, Danny Kelly from The Ringer has put together a comprehensive draft guide and is live from the Combine. He's going to join us next. Tell us who fits well with the Seahawks team coming into next season. That's next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.